Thanks, Blessing Zulu. Good evening, Zimbabwe. It's 17 hours 20 UTC, 7:20 p.m. in Zimbabwe on Saturday, August 27th, 2016. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Kip Dube. Here are our top stories this evening. A ZANU-PF member of parliament claims that whites are causing unrest in Zimbabwe. Female soccer medics say they are being ill-treated by players and fans. And as usual, we'll focus on issues affecting women. Stay tuned. A ZANU-PF member of parliament claims that disgruntled whites are sabotaging Zimbabwe's economy in order to cause unrest in the country. Speaking in a Studio 7 political panel featuring MTCT lawmaker Tabita Kumalo, ZANU-PF lawmaker Joseph Chuma claimed that their aim is to ensure that ZANU-PF is removed from power.
It's not a secret that obviously the white people, the financial muscle, and they are pulling that muscle right now on us. And unfortunately, to the detriment of our citizens, of all Zimbabweans, actually. So we need to have Honorable Kumalo and her team to start speaking positively about Zimbabwe, to start engaging their friends, the whites, to come in with respect. Understand, the indemnization law is not bad. It's not saying that you take somebody's company for free. No, we don't say that. And it has been clarified, and the president spoke about it. People speak about it every time. Even when you look at the system, like especially when it comes to natural resources, all we have said is that the 51.9 says that the resources are ours. When you come in to extract them, we must remain with something. But we are not taking anything for free. The shares that are being spoken about are going to be paid for. So that investor will not have lost anything, because at the end of the day, they will recoup their money, they will get their money, and it's a win-win situation for everybody. Let's treat each other as equals and have that mutual respect and understanding of each other. We are not out to take anybody's company for free. If anybody comes in to invest, if they're going to have a local partner, which is normal in any other country, go to South Africa, go to Botswana, you always need a local partner, but that local partner must pay up the shares that they're going to hold. It's not going to be taken for free. And all these things have been explained. But you find Honorable Kumalo now is saying that you want to grab for free. This is the kind of misinformation that is not doing good for us in Zimbabwe, because we are misinforming the world. We're misinforming the investor. How does the investor come in now? I expected the Honorable to understand that, because she sits in parliament and she knows those things. And she's the one who's supposed to be going out there to propagate it and to explain it to people, so that people understand. And when they come knowing that nobody is going to take anything for free, because it has never been said that. The Industrialization Act does not say that too.
Honorable Kumalo, just briefly.
Yes. I am not a believer of Zim Asset. I think you are just daydreaming. Just take this thing and throw it in the beam. And secondly, I am not a member of ZANU-PF to go outside the world and campaign for your Zuma set, because I don't belong to your party. And being in government, I'm in the opposition, and I'm moving my party ideology and agenda. The closure of companies. Let's forget about the companies that are owned by whites. What's happened to the government parastatals? Why are they closing down, streaming down? They are just ghosts. Places. Those are government properties. Where are we missing it? Let's say the white man closed down because he's white, he doesn't like Zimbabweans. The parastatals don't belong to the white man. They belong to the Zimbabweans. And anyway, if we're talking of us on the issue of the indigenization, if I have to buy shares, I have to buy shares like you said. Where the hell do I get the money from? As we speak today, we are only allowed $50. There are no transactions, external or internal. So where does this Zimbabwean person who is a vendor buy shares, 51% shares from a company when he doesn't even own a bed? And then the issue, you got political independence, but we are saying we did not free ourselves after the political independence, because economically this country was ticking when we took over, and we started looting, and today we are suffering because of your looting.
That was MTCT lawmaker Tabita Kumalo. You also heard from Joseph Chuma, ZANU-PF Member of Parliament for Pelindaba Mpopoma.
We have an important programming change announcement. Effective Monday, August 29th, 2016, Studio 7 will stop its English program. However, English news on Zimbabwe will continue to be broadcast on VOA's English to Africa programs, Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday, and Nightline Africa, Saturday and Sunday. Studio 7 will continue programming in English on Live Talk, which has been expanded to 1 full hour. You will also be able to get Zimbabwe news on our website and Facebook. We will continue broadcasting in Shona and Ndebele Monday through Friday, and on Saturday and Sunday, where we have expanded Shona and Ndebele programs to 30 minutes. For broadcast times and frequencies, please visit our website, www.voazimbabwe.com. That's www.voazimbabwe.com.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
According to the State Department's annual International Religious Freedom Report, religiously motivated persecution continues to be perpetrated by governments and by violent extremist groups, such as Boko Haram and ISIL, also known as Daesh, around the world. The 2015 report, released last week, highlights in particular the worrisome prevalence of blasphemy and apostasy laws, which fully one quarter of the world's countries have on the books. Governments use these laws to tighten their regulatory grip on religious groups, particularly on minority religious groups and religions which are viewed as not traditional to that specific country. In his introduction to the report, Ambassador-at-Large for International Religious Freedom David Saperstein noted that the existence of these laws has been used by governments in too many cases to intimidate, repress religious minorities, and governments have too often failed to take appropriate steps to prevent societal violence sparked by accusations of blasphemy and apostasy. Ambassador Saperstein explains that even if accusations of blasphemy or apostasy turn out to be untrue, governments will often fail to act to hold the accusers accountable. The purpose of this annual report is not to lecture, but to shine a light on these problems and find ways to resolve them. The report also serves as an objective and comprehensive resource for NGOs, civil society groups, media, and foreign governments. The protection and promotion of religious freedom remains a key foreign policy priority for the United States. As daunting as the many challenges are that we face across the globe, we will not be deterred in the work that we do, said Ambassador Saperstein. This report is at once vivid testimony for the many whose plight might otherwise receive scant attention, and a document, a blueprint of what must be addressed to bring us closer to the day when religious freedom will thrive for all. Ambassador Saperstein added that U.S. government officials, including at the highest level, speak out regularly against abuses and violations of religious freedom, and raise these concerns directly with governments that fail to protect religious freedom.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
You're listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington. We are broadcasting on 909 Metum Wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15460 shortwave frequencies. And as usual, we now hand you over to Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Welcome to the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. Tonight, we have the pleasure of speaking to the National Vice President of the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, Thandiwe Dube, who is currently receiving treatment after she blacked out during a 200-kilometer march from Murewa to Harare. Welcome to the Women's Forum, Ms. Dube.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Dube, you are part of the group of rural teachers that have been protesting from Murewa to Harare. Tell us a little bit about the protest.
Our protest, we have 10 demands that we have. Mainly, our salary is below poverty bottom line, that it may be increased so that at least we can have a better life. Secondly, we have rural allowance, which we are advocating that it goes up by 100%, like in other neighboring countries like Botswana, Mozambique, and Zambia. And we also have the issue of leave days. Those who are currently joining the service as women, they are going on unpaid maternity leave. Whereas maternity is a national duty, which should be paid for by the state. So we are demanding that we also have full payment, or if one goes on maternity leave, just like our counterparts, the soldiers and the nurses, since we are all government workers. We are also advocating for the infrastructure. Most schools in Zimbabwe have not been improved infrastructurally, especially after their construction. And this is also pulling down our education, quality of education in Zimbabwe. For example, now the government has introduced the STEM program. And this STEM program, if you go to rural areas, you hardly get 1 out of 10 schools in the rural areas that have a library or a functional laboratory. So how can our children who are learning in rural areas benefit from such programs which the state rolls out? So we want equal opportunities for children who are in rural areas and in urban areas. Then we also have the issue of vacation leave. Vacation leave is a priority that was withdrawn to us. And up to now, we don't know what is happening to the leave days we are accruing. So as women also, we have some grievances. For instance, like I am a mother, and if I have to take care of my children, I have to feed in vacation leave these days. Whereas I, as a mother, I'm supposed to be looking after my children. So those are some of the things that we are advocating for as rural teachers, especially as women. And I urge women to join us, because at the moment there are very few women who are willing to go out there and really show what is on the ground. They only wait for the male counterparts to act for them.
Talking about going out there, you were part of the marchers that were marching from Murewa, and you were going to march on foot 200 kilometers to Harare to hand in a petition. But something happened along the way. Tell us a little bit about that incident. What happened?
What happened is on Tuesday night, we were raided by 3 CIOs when we were at camp at Shambanaka. That's when we identified 2 of these CIOs, because he linked with one of our colleagues who were in the march. These 2 men, we had met them at Mtawa Tower, where we were supposed to firstly submit our petition there. And they're telling us that we must leave this area at once, or else we'll be heroes in our graves. So we left Shambanaka and went to Nakiwa, where we decided to spend the night. And then at Nakiwa, these 3 men, they came again, and now there were 6. And they closed us in one of these unfinished shops, and they started interrogating us, took away our cell phones. That's when they took the president and our spokesperson. They took them away to, I don't know, for other interrogations from the main group. Then from there, I had a blackout. That's when one of the villagers managed to escape with me, and I spent the night there. Then on Wednesday morning, that's when I had to go to CSU, so that I get treatment.
We understand that when you fainted, you had your niece or nephew with you, and also that you are expecting. What made you decide, even with all those challenges, to carry on with the protest?
What exactly pushed me to leave home and go out there and join the march is that we as women, we tend to sit back and wait for our male counterparts to do the job for us. But I think it's high time we women went out there so that the state knows exactly what our plight is. Then they can act. Because once we sit at home and they think that everything is okay, but if we go out there, we actually prove a point that this is what we want, this is what is on the ground. I think action can be taken from this.
So moving forward, what are you going to do? We understand that some of your members were arrested after you left. Are you not afraid of getting arrested yourself?
No, I'm not afraid of getting arrested, because we are going out there for a cause, and we need the state to know exactly what we want. And once they are back on the road, I'm going to join them.
Time is not on our side. Thank you very much, Ms. Tandiwe Dube, the National Vice President of the Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, for having been our guest here on the Women's Forum, a forum where we look at issues affecting women.
Thank you.
As you now know, Studio 7's English broadcast ends tomorrow. This will be my last Women's Forum in English. But remember, we still broadcast in Shona and Ndebele. So don't forget to join me every Saturday on the Women's Forum in Shona. I'm Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye.
Thanks very much, Marvelous Mhlanga Nyahuye. We hope you have a wonderful weekend. Top-flight soccer club female physiotherapists, commonly known as medics, say it is hard to work in a male-dominated dressing room as they have to deal with some abusive fans and players, in addition to unwritten club rules and regulations that prohibit them from sleeping with their spouses ahead of soccer games. Reporter Arthur Chikoiriwa has more.
Some of the physiotherapists that have been ill-treated include Jacqueline Sarande, girl for Wange Football Club, who faces many challenges like male egos and working hard to prove that they can do the job like their male counterparts. Jay, a Sarande guy is affectionately known in soccer circles, says her job ultimately speaks for itself.
You need to be able to handle all the male egos in soccer. Sometimes your advice as a therapist is taken with a pinch of salt because you are a woman. And culturally, women are supposed to be subservient to men. But however, with time, you learn to adapt to the different personalities.
Another medic, Sibusisiwe Mutunzi of Cholocho Football Club, says at times they are abused by football fans and players.
I once faced the challenge of being beaten by a certain Dynamos player.
Sarandega adds that she also once suffered in the hands of some Dynamos fans who called a prostitute when she entered the field of play to attend to an injured player.
My first experience was in Faro Stadium when we went for warm-up. And the spectators went, "Ure, ure, ure." And I was quite shocked. But I knew that I'm married and I'm not going out with any of the teammates or the players. So I just learned to develop a thick skin. That is from spectators.
In terms of the use of juju or traditional medicine in soccer, both say they are now used to it. Mutunzi simply says, when in Rome, one is to do what Romans do.
So whether there's juju, whether there's anything, I'm prepared for anything. I don't mind. The fact that I consider the boys and the coaches as my brothers. So anything that the coach wants, the coach or the players wants to do, I'm part of it. I was told that two to three days before the match, you should not engage yourself in any sexual activity. With your husband or without your husband, because I joined the team before I got married. So, you know, it's not a problem with me.
Former Warriors and the Zimbabwe Sevens Football Club striker Andrew Mai Maria Kadengu says it is rare for female medics to attend to players on the soccer field. But he stresses that there's nothing wrong with women taking up such challenges.
It was very uncommon for females to attend to players at the pitch. We had a professional like Dr. Ebetu Shokunze, who had a surgery of his own. He used to treat us as he was male. But then, probably if the injury persisted, a day after you'd get to his surgery and get attended to by a female nurse. So I would probably equate that to what's happening now.
Clubs are required by FIFA to have qualified physiotherapists on the bench, whether they are men or women. Reporting for Studio 7 in Chinoy, this is Ata Chigoriwa.
Premier Soccer League boss Kennedy Ndebele says the abuse of female medics is uncalled for.
From the way we have treated fans, officials or physiotherapists, we've viewed them as part of the family, as one family.
So now some are saying that whenever they attend to players on the pitch, they are normally abused by soccer players and fans. So how do you go around that?
That hasn't come to our attention. We see the couple of clubs that have female medics. Of course, we had one incident where a female medic was sort of abused, but we dealt with that situation. Where it involves the players and officials, it's easy to deal with. But maybe fans may shout abuse, but it's not something that we are encouraging, and it's not something that we are aware of, really, except for just that one incident that we had in 2014, I think.
That was Kenneth Ndebele of the Premier Soccer League speaking with Studio 7 from Harare. Now a recap of our top stories. A ZANU-PF member of parliament claims that whites are sabotaging Zimbabwe's economy, and female soccer medics say they are being ill-treated by players and fans. That's our broadcast this evening. Now stand by for Studio 7 in Ndebele with Chris Gande. This is Gibbs Dube in Washington, D.C., wishing you a pleasant evening and a very, very good night. And please note that this is our last Saturday broadcast, but stay tuned to Studio 7 in Ndebele and Shona. Bye-bye, Zimbabwe.